content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from various sources. I'm going to start with an article from AARP, The Bulletin, how us senior citizens are changing the world today. And we're up to a section called Travel. Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube are filled with the exploits of young travel influencers who trot the globe while filming themselves in exotic locales. But that perception of the 20-something jet setter is not reality for much of the travel industry. AARP's 2023 Travel Trends study found that Americans 60 to 69 years old are the biggest travel spenders, planning to lay out $7,300 on average this year, compared with about 30% less for travelers ages 18 to 49. Travelers 50 plus will average 4 trips this year. For older travelers, spending is up in a way that makes it hard for the travel industry to ignore, said Patty David, Vice President of Consumer Insights at AARP. A 2007 movie starring Jack Nicholson and Morgan Freeman helped to popularize the term bucket list, meaning experiences people seek to accomplish as they age. Such lists have only gotten more popular. According to the AARP study, 63% of American travelers age 50 plus have bucket list trips, and their commitment to visit such places has increased since the pandemic. The bucket list is universal, and the travel industry now caters to once-in-a-lifetime destination seekers, whether that's for an Alaskan cruise, an African safari, or an adventure in Antarctica, says travel advisor Debbie Bush, 75, president of Avenue 2 Travel. A good example of the bucket list travel boom can be seen in the Smithsonian Journeys Travel Program, which mostly serves travelers ages 50 and older, seeking high-end experiences. More than four decades ago, it offered a half dozen trips per year. Today, Smithsonian Journeys oversees more than 350 annual departures on all seven continents. As long as they're able, boomers will want to travel in interesting and authentic ways, said former director Amy Kotkin. She helped introduce several changes because of demand from older travelers. Smaller group sizes, subgroups within a trip to accommodate different interests and abilities, and more active travel for older people. Another change that started with boomers, whisper sets, the audio headsets that allow groups to hear better on guided outings. Now, it's an expectation on tours, regardless of age, Kotkin says. And there's the rise of multi-generational family vacations. Family trips don't just mean mom, dad, and the kids anymore, says Jason DeVries, resort manager at Four Seasons Resort Oahu at Ko'olana in Hawaii. Now grandparents want to come along and sit by the pool. The adults may want to play pickleball, and the grandkids are interested in skateboarding. Then they all have meals together. Older travelers and multi-generational sailings are also driving the cruise industry. A great advantage of multi-gen groups on a cruise is that it's fairly turnkey, says Wes Rowland, president of the Cruise Experts Agency. On a cruise, the meals are planned, activities are tailored to everyone within the group, and you can be together as much as you want to, and apart as much as you need to. Now let's look at the entertainment industry. Blockbuster movies are no longer just for teens, and AARP is allowed to take a bow. A ComScore box office study commissioned by the association found older audiences have returned to movie theaters at rates outpacing those from even before the pandemic. Older moviegoers helped push several films to strong grosses, said Heather Naraki, vice president of AARP's Movies for Grown-Ups program. Tops among them were Top Gun Maverick, with nearly 40% of its audience 45 or older, and Elvis with 45% age 45 and up. The success this year of films such as 80 for Brady, $40 million gross against a $28 million budget, A Man Called Otto, and Sound of Freedom, half of the audience was over 45, Variety says, shows older audiences will continue to see movies in theaters and support filmmakers and studios that connect directly with their interests. Naraki says, Who's starring in these films? Of the top 20 actors most reliably drawing audiences to theaters, only one is under 50, and that youngster, Chris Hemsworth, is 40. Tom Cruise is 61, and Tom Hanks is 67, and Denzel Washington is 68. Morgan Freeman is 86, and so on. If we're talking about actors who can carry a movie today, we're looking at people 55, 60, and up, says Matthew Baloney, host of the show business podcast The Town. And you're targeting older audiences, too, because they're the people still buying movie tickets. In music, the legacy acts are still big time. With nearly $1 billion in ticket sales, Elton John's Farewell Yellow Brick Road tour is the highest-grossing concert tour in history. The beat goes on. After setting records with his one-man Broadway show and selling his music catalog for an estimated $550 million, Bruce Springsteen's 73 this year packed North American stadiums on a tour that saw tickets selling for as high as $5,000. Billy Joel, 74, may be ending his New York residency at Madison Square Garden after filling 1.6 million seats. But Las Vegas is loaded with long-range stints by older artists such as Sting, Garth Brooks, Barry Manilow, Santana, Donny Osmond, and Rod Stewart. In 2023's music business, these aren't oldies acts. They're the main acts, says Panos A. Penne, president of the Recording Academy, which presents the Grammy Awards. To a show executive, it's called predictable cash flow. Back in the living room, it's the same picture. The Wall Street Journal reported that people over 50 accounted for 39% of streaming watch time as of May 2022, up from 35% a year earlier. That older audience now drives what we see, whether it's upcoming network programs, including The Golden Bachelor, a senior version of ABC's reality dating series, or streaming hits such as Only Murders in the Building, The Crown, and Hacks. When you have a show like The Diplomat, with two-thirds of the audience over 50 and one-third over 65, says Brian Furrer of Nielsen Global Media, you can bet TV studios are planning more shows for this aging part of the demographic. We have one more section in this article, politics. One place you can literally count the impact of older Americans is politics, where in 2022, older voters proved to be the deciders in U.S. elections. AARP's post-election survey found that 61% of ballots cast in the 63 closest races for the U.S. House of Representatives were by voters 50-plus. Those older voters are growing impatient on a range of issues. Last year, Congress passed and President Joe Biden signed the Inflation Reduction Act, which allowed Medicare to negotiate with drug makers on prices for some of the most expensive drugs. The act also put a $2,000 limit on annual out-of-pocket prescription drug costs, starting in 2025 and capping the price of insulin at $35 per month for Medicare enrollees. Soaring drug prices are a kitchen table budget issue, said Nancy Lamond, Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer at AARP. Some advocates say the federal government needs to be more aggressive in funding programs to help aging boomers. Congress and the administration are making progress in addressing issues such as more support for family caregivers, said Brenda Sulik, Chief Advocacy and Engagement Officer with the National Council on Aging, NCOA. But these policies are not moving fast enough. At the state level, lawmakers are starting to respond to pressure from older voters on issues such as brain health. The result is 1,000 points of light effect across the country. For example, the state of Georgia, working with Atlanta's Emory University, has created a team of memory care specialists to better assess individuals at risk for Alzheimer's disease. 24 states are developing strategies to address the needs of their older residents, according to the nonprofit SCAN Foundation. We are in a crisis in preparing for the aging population nationwide, says Sarita Mohanty, its president and CEO. We are at a pivotal point where we are behind and we have to go at a faster pace. Never known for their fast pace, federal regulatory agencies are making more progress. In September 2022, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services released its first national strategy to support family caregivers, which includes nearly 350 actions the federal government will take to assist these caregivers. The strategy encourages states to raise funding for the programs, but it doesn't require it. Critics say that's not enough. When it comes to the high cost of long-term care, older adults and their families are already in crisis, said NCOA's Sulik. Finally, AARP is bringing about tangible change at the local level. AARP Livable Communities has given out more than 1,300 grants worth $16.3 million to help communities launch, promote, and fund projects to age their aging residents. So we have a little bit of information here about the people who contributed to these articles. Richard Eisenberg is an unretired journalist who writes the View from Unretired column for MarketWatch. Lisa Lee Freeman was founder and editor of ShopSmart magazine from Consumer Reports. Sari Harar is an award-winning reporter and contributing editor to AARP Publications, who writes on health, public policy, and other topics. Chris Taylor is a senior correspondent with Reuters who covers personal finance and workplace issues. David Hockman, a contributing editor for AARP the magazine, has written cover stories on the pandemic and on climate change for the AARP Bulletin. And finally, this last article I read was by Mindy Fetterman, who is a former writer and editor for USA Today. She writes for AARP the magazine, Stateline, and other publications. Now, also from AARP the Bulletin, let's look at this article on your health. A mini stroke is a big deal, despite the name. The effects of a TIA may be temporary, but the implications are often serious. Late on the afternoon of March 19, 2015, Dawn Turnage sat down with her smartphone for a video chat with her toddler niece, Naomi. Suddenly, the child said, "Titi," Naomi's name for her, "why are you making funny faces at me?" Naomi's mother, a physician assistant, grabbed the phone, took one look at her sister's drooping face, and told her to call an ambulance. But Turnage stalled. Eventually, she agreed to go to an urgent care clinic where she was wrongly diagnosed with Bell's palsy, a neurological disorder. Turnage's sister wouldn't relent, and she persuaded someone at urgent care to call an ambulance. Emergency physicians ran tests, including a computerized tomography, CT scan, and an MRI, and concluded that Turnage, then 45, had experienced a transient ischemic attack, better known as a TIA or a mini stroke, due to a short-term blockage of blood to the brain that typically resolves itself within 24 hours. She had several headaches and even a blackout in recent days without understanding what was going on. The workup revealed a blood clot in a neck artery that had blocked blood flow to her brain until it cleared on her own, she said. Turnage knows she was fortunate. If the clot had not cleared, the delay might have meant brain damage and disability, even death. By hesitating to get to a hospital's emergency department, I really put myself at risk, she said. A TAA may be temporary, but nearly one in five people who have one go on to have a stroke within the next 90 days, and half of those strokes occur within 48 hours of the TIA. Most TIAs are actually small strokes, says Andrew Budson, MD, Chief of Behavioral Neurology for the VA Boston Healthcare System. It's just that the damage to the brain is small enough that the symptoms go away. TIAs can result from a brief blockage of blood to the brain, which may be caused by a clot. TIA symptoms, like those of stroke, often affect one side of the body. They include a drooping face, slurred speech, dizziness, and blurred or lost vision. Think of the anachronism FAST. Face, drooping, arm, weakness, speech, difficulty, time to call 911. Usually, the first tests given to determine a TIA are a CT scan and an MRI of the brain and blood vessels to look for brain damage or other causes of the symptoms. An MRI is especially important as it can show damage too small to appear on a CT scan, experts say. Sometimes doctors also will perform an echocardiogram to look for abnormalities in the heart and blood vessels that might account for symptoms. Lisa Wolf, now 64, a retired finance manager who lives in Holly Springs, North Carolina, experienced a TIA on Thanksgiving 2003 with symptoms that included sudden flashing visual disturbances, left side weakness, and significant speech difficulty, she recalls. I remember feeling frustrated at not being able to communicate. The symptoms resolved, so the neurologist who examined Wolf at the hospital diagnosed a TIA. But the doctor wanted to know what had caused it. An electrocardiogram revealed a patent foramen ovale, or PFO, a hole between the upper chambers of the heart. Everyone is born with a hole. It is patent if it doesn't close on its own within several months after birth. This happens in about one in four babies. In a few individuals, a stroke can occur if a clot moves through the opening and reaches the brain. Wolf had surgery to close the hole and has been fine since. Other conditions can mimic a TIA, which is why patients need a full medical evaluation, among them migraine, epilepsy, and hypoglycemia, low blood sugar, according to Robert Brown, Jr., MD, a neurologist at the Mayo Clinic. A migraine-related aura or a localized seizure in an area of the brain can cause TIA-like symptoms, he says. The diagnosis of TIA is largely based on the symptoms and exam, meaning doctors often make the diagnosis even if the tests are normal, said Tracy Madsen, MD, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Epidemiology at Brown University. If someone's symptoms are consistent with TIA and we don't find an alternative cause, we treat it as a TIA, she says. You still need to assess your risk to prevent a future stroke. To assess your overall risk, your doctor will likely look at factors including high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, especially atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heartbeat, high cholesterol, obesity, and sickle cell disease. Certain behaviors also increase risks, such as smoking, a diet high in saturated fats, and a sedentary lifestyle. Doctors use a set of criteria to help evaluate a patient's risk. Each year, more than 750,000 Americans have a stroke, which is among the leading causes of death in this country. Women have a higher risk than men, according to the American Stroke Association, and black women, such as Turnage, are in greater danger than white women. Many strokes are preventable by knowing your risk factors and working with a clinician to treat them, Brown says, urging patients to take medication as prescribed, exercise, drink alcohol only in moderation, and eat a healthy diet low in salt and fat and rich in fruits and vegetables, fish, nuts, and whole grains. Turnage, now 52, takes daily aspirin and blood pressure medication, monitors calories, avoids red meat and salt, and works out at a gym 3 times a week. She's lost 62 pounds since her TIA. I am painfully aware that black women, such as myself, are at much higher risk for stroke than other populations. Turnage says, so I feel it's important that we know our numbers, blood pressure and cholesterol, manage our stress, and seek medical care, she says. We need to put ourselves first, she stresses. Having a TIA was a very scary experience, and I was blessed that it didn't turn into something worse. The writer of this article was Marlene Kimmons, who's a Washington-based writer who specializes in health, science, and the environment. She is a frequent contributor to the Washington Post and spent more than 3 decades in the Los Angeles Times Washington Bureau. Now, here's a little side article. How can you tell that it's a TIA? You can't. TIA symptoms are the same as those of a stroke. Only a health professional can make that call. Experts say, if the symptoms go away, don't assume everything is fine. It's human nature to think, this must not be a problem. But it may be serious, Brown says. Fast action matters. Call 911 immediately. Don't waste time searching your symptoms on the internet. Don't call your primary care physician. It may be 6 hours before they can call you back, said Louise McCullough, MD, a neurologist at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. Also, don't wait for a family member to come home and give you a ride to the emergency room, she urges. Echoes Errol Green, MD, an emergency physician, it is better to spend time in the emergency department being evaluated, even if it turns out not to be a TIA or a stroke, than to sit at home. From AARP, the magazine, This is 70, is being 70 a laughing matter? One woman's late-in-life reinvention unfolds on comic stages. Pam Vassell is wearing red glasses that match the color of her lipstick. Her outfit is elder chic. Black flowing top, a colorful beaded necklace, a crop of curly hair more salt than pepper. In her hand is a microphone. Thanksgiving is one long hot flash by the oven. All I want is for everyone to go home so I can stick my head in the freezer, she quips. The room laughs. No matter that at 79 she's well past the menopause years, she knows that will go over with this crowd. Vassell is doing stand-up in front of 150 paying guests in a dimly lit basement club in Manhattan. Audience members laugh heartily at her jokes and stories. No surprise. Vassell has been leaving friends laughing since she was in her 20s. But it wasn't until she was 73 that she began eliciting giggles from strangers. Retired after a career as an art director and a college administrator, she finagled a shot at a New York City comedy club. A late-in-life career was born. It's exciting and frightening, Vassell says. People are close to you. There's no escape. But after each performance, even if my knees are knocking, I love it. Vassell focuses mostly on humor derived from what it's like to be at her stage of life, how doctor appointments become social events, how grown children can treat you like a little kid. She's finding that even mortality can get the crowd laughing. I would like to be buried in my slinky black dress, she starts. It hasn't fit in years, but the undertaker could slit it up the back. The only trouble is, I would have to go through eternity with my butt sticking out. Bada boom. Her latest show was held on the Lower East Side, once home to immigrants and now a hip, youthful neighborhood. She continues to hone her craft with each performance. I'm learning a new way to communicate with an audience. It's like having people in your living room. Now we're going to start on this article, 10 Shows That Changed Our Lives. For more than 75 years, TV has entertained and informed us. But some shows have done even more. AARP critic Tim Appello shares his picks of those that have altered how we think. live, and hope. The show that made food hip, The French Chef. Back when Americans were gobbling frozen TV dinners and those quivering Jell-O desserts, Julia Child's cooking show, The French Chef, 1962-73, snapped us out of our culinary trance, making us believe we all should consider croquembouche for dessert. Her show practically invented the foodie movement, empowered chefs, both professional and home-based, and led to a whole new industry of TV food shows, cooking competitions, and rock star chefs to satisfy and expand the nation's suddenly sophisticated palates. The show that made us love planet Earth, The Undersea World of Jacques Cousteau. Jacques Cousteau first wanted to be a pilot, but after he drove his dad's car off a cliff and started swimming to overcome his injuries, he channeled his energy toward inventing the aqualung, the first widely embraced underwater breathing apparatus, and took us all on a trip to the bottom of the sea. The thrills of the undersea world of Jacques Cousteau, 1966-76, and the Cousteau Odyssey, 1977-1982, helped inspire a renaissance in nature programming on TV and ignited the environmental movement, even when most people couldn't imagine the oceans were in danger. The show that put a mirror in front of America, All in the Family. While anti-Vietnam War protests, civil rights marches, and assassinations filled the news, primetime TV shows such as The Beverly Hillbillies, 1962-71, and Green Acres, 1965-71, strenuously sidestepped reality. Norman Lear's All in the Family, 1971-79, broke tradition by tackling tough but real topics, politics, race, feminism, homosexuality. The characters were modeled partly on Lear's parents. His dad often told his mom to stifle, and the arguments between Archie Bunker, Carol O'Connor, and his meathead son-in-law, Rob Reiner, were prompted by the liberal and conservative debate in George Bernard Shaw's play, Major Barbara. Lear wanted to throw in the argument out there. Reiner told the Television Academy, to get people thinking and talking about the issues of the day. Well, that's all we have time for on this article for today, but we will tackle more of it next time. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. Be sure and listen at the same time next week. I hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.